Alrighty, cool. I am recording so you guys can start whenever.
Okay. Wait, one second. I gotta pull up the ad read. My bad.
And what's the ad read?
Andy Ludke.
Oh, the My Perfect franchise.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Welcome on into the Wolverine.com podcast. Clayton Safey alongside Anthony Broom here on a Thursday, taking you into the NFL draft, which kicks off tonight with the first round, goes Friday and Saturday. It'll cap off Saturday evening. We'll talk about Michigan's guys heading there, thinking about 7-8 guys potentially picked this weekend, maybe some fireworks tonight in the first round. We'll get to that, some predictions. We will also talk about Michigan pursuing a kicker in the transfer portal. We've seen a few guys leave this week, but Michigan potentially about to add another. And then we'll talk about the team trip, which is coming up on the East Coast here starting this weekend. But before we get to all of that, we want to talk about our sponsor, My Perfect Franchise. Are you ready to leave the corporate rat race for the American dream? Looking for a side hustle while working your current job? Wanting to diversify, build wealth, and or leave a legacy? Well, Andy can help. Andy is a franchise consultant as well as a franchise owner, helps people find franchises that fit their skill sets, financial requirements, time to commit, and more. His services are 100% free, and he's here to help if you have any questions about business ownership. You can contact Andy Ludke, www.myperfectfranchise.net. For the people watching on YouTube, we got the site pulled up right there. You can call him, 404-973-9901. Send him an email, andy@myperfectfranchise.net, or head to the website there, book a time with him on his calendar, hit Andy's calendar there. Again, 100% free consultation, so all the information you need is at your fingertips right there. Thank you to Andy for his support, as always, here on Thursdays. Anthony Broom, you are a draft guy. How are you feeling?
Oh, my gosh. Well, more so than being a draft guy, I am like a Detroit Lions guy by birth, which means by proxy, the NFL draft becomes your Super Bowl every year because we've never been to one. So, and then as you graduate into the later stages of what we do, you know, one of my first, obviously I've been covering Michigan for almost a decade. One of my first big boy jobs where, you know, I had to pay taxes and benefit, you know, had benefits and things like that, was covering the NFL. And it made me love this weekend even more because it's a marriage of, it's a marriage of these two entities that, you know, Saturday we go to work all day. We watch these guys, every snap these guys play, you know, at least on the Michigan side of things. And then Sunday when we're decompressing, or not really, there is no decompressing during football season, but Sunday when we're couch bound instead of press box bound, you're watching the NFL all day and you're seeing these guys that you've watched on Saturdays make plays and you know, guys that are stars in college, maybe transition into being role players at the next level. Guys that were kind of under the radar, find the right spot in the NFL, right coach, right development, become stars at the next level, a la Tom Brady. So for me, it's just, I'm always over the moon about draft weekend. It is one of those, like, stop everything you're doing and lock in. I'm the guy, like, more often than not, I will watch or follow along with all 7 hours on Saturday. I mean, there's going to be 4 hours Thursday night, 5 hours on Friday night. I mean, it's a long weekend, especially when you wind up those NFL draft weekends when I was actually working on a beat in that league are, it's a grind maybe more so than, you know, think of like three straight days of National Signing Day is the type of grind that is, but it's just, it's really cool. And I really enjoy it. I like the group. We'll talk about the guys that are coming out of the Michigan class, but you know, not as much high end talent in terms of first round. You know, last year I had the number two overall pick. That doesn't happen a lot for Michigan. There's no guys that are in that vein this year, but another healthy dose of guys that will go to the league. And again, we've talked about this a lot this offseason. Maybe the biggest storyline for Michigan in this draft class is the guys who didn't enter this draft and decided to come back. So next 2 years should be a lot of fun.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I think that top-end talent, some of it might be in Ann Arbor right now getting ready for this fall. I mean, numerous guys that could have gone decide to come back. which obviously is a major storyline of the Michigan football season, but it is a storyline that's going to seep in here this weekend as well. And I have come to appreciate the draft a little bit more doing this over the last few years and watching, you know, these Michigan guys kind of achieve their dream. So I'm excited for tonight. And I think we will probably, you know, odds would say, have a Michigan player go here in the first round. It's interesting. We were talking before the show too, AB, is it seemed like DJ Turner there after the combine, after his pro day was kind of creeping up and becoming, you know, potential late first round guy. Now seems like the consensus here, I haven't found a mock draft in terms of these final ones the last couple days that has him there, all of them in the second round. And then Mozzie Smith is more of the guy who is the first round guy who's almost flipped with him in terms of stock. And I know new intel comes in during draft week and things like that, but I want to ask you to start first round, who's going, how many, you know, Michigan guys, it's really those two are the only candidates, but what do you think will happen in the first round with these guys?
That's the thing. I mean, it is just so unpredictable. We were talking about it before we pressed record here in that, you know, once you get to maybe pick 15 or prospect 15 on your board, whatever it is, it's kind of wide open. I mean, there's not a lot of drop off between maybe those mid first round guys and some of those mid to late second round guys. So, you know, I could see both Mozzie Smith, DJ Turner going late in the first round. I certainly don't think either of them would be selected before, I don't know, the mid to late 20s. You know, everyone is in that range. Everyone's moved up a slot because the Miami Dolphins don't have a first round pick this year. But, you know, I tend to believe it probably would be Mozzie just because of the athletic traits. You know, Michigan asked him to play a lot of nose tackle and to eat up blocks. But, and I think that, you know, in large part that can be what he does in the NFL, but he's also a guy that when you look at some of these athletic testing numbers, again, we didn't really participate in the combine, didn't really do much of anything at pro day. But you know, he's a guy that headlined Bruce Feldman's freaks list. He has the chance to be a more disruptive defensive lineman at the next level. Obviously not a one-to-one comparison, but you know, it's just an example of how your roles can change. Like Rashawn Gary was more or less kind of I won't say a run anchoring defensive end, but you know, he was more setting an edge more than rushing the passer when he was at Michigan. And now, you know, he's one of the better young pure pass rushers in the NFL. It's just a matter of where you go and the tools that you have. And it's not, you know, the NFL draft is all about projectable traits. So for me, I think it's Mozzie Smith that probably has the better shot to go. I think the cornerback class is fairly deep. You know, you look at DJ Turner and, you know, he's sticky in man coverage. I mean, he is a guy that will, I knew he was fast. I didn't know he was fourth fastest 40-yard dash in the history of the NFL combine fast. I don't know that he always plays that fast. And obviously you'd like to see maybe, you know, your boundary corners, you want a little more length there. He's only 5'11", not super disruptive in terms of being a ball hawk or, you know, making plays on jump balls. I mean, just think, you know, my frame of reference is the NFC North. Just think of being in a one-on-one against a guy like Justin Jefferson, who's just bigger, more physical, and things like that. So I think that he's probably more of an early to mid second round pick. But again, it's all, they see those traits and they see sticky in man coverage and they see, you know, the athletic potential. Nothing would surprise me. And it all just kind of comes down to teams. And there have been mocks that have both of these guys in the first round. There have been mocks that have had one and one. There have been mocks where, you know, both of them are still sitting there late in the second round. So I don't know. A lot of people, there are more draft analysts out there now than there have ever been because everyone's a content creator now. All you need is a Twitter account or a YouTube account and, you know, access to film to be that, which is great. But I don't think anyone can sit here in good confidence and say, yeah, this is where this guy's going.
For sure. And once the chaos starts, it seems to, you know, kind of change on a dime there. And there's going to be some surprises, especially in the second half of the first round. I'm with you. I think it's going to be Mozzie probably as a first rounder. There's just too many teams, it seems like, in the 20s that need a defensive tackle when you read the, you know, articles about what each team needs. And I think he could be a perfect fit there. Reading Mel Kiper Jr., his final mock today, calling Mozzie the best run stuffer in the entire class. That's valuable stuff right there. You know, you talk about everyone needs, you know, these elite pass rushers now, but you still got to stop the run to, you know, let those pass rushers go to work on third down. So Mozzie there, and if my math or not my math, but if my research is correct, Mozzie would be the first Michigan defensive tackle to go in the first round since 1985, Kevin Brooks going number 17 overall to the Dallas Cowboys. So this would I was surprised to keep scrolling back on the list of draftees there. And if DJ Turner goes in the first round, he would be the first Michigan corner to go first round since Leon Hall went number 18 in 2007. They've had some pretty good corners, but mostly third, fourth round types, and you know, some success there. But first round is a whole different deal. Let's talk about a guy who I think is probably going to go next behind those two guys that could go in the first and maybe the second. It's Luke Schoonmaker. And I wouldn't have said that a couple months ago, but he's been one of the bigger risers, it seems like, of the entire draft process. Didn't even get an invite to the Senior Bowl. He goes to the Shrine Bowl, was hurt still from the AC joint injury he had in the Fiesta Bowl, so didn't do a whole lot. But I think he's a guy that's really impressive in interviews from what I've read. And it doesn't surprise us, right? Having talked to him on numerous occasions over the last few years, super impressive guy. But his strength, you know, he's a good blocker. He can pass catch. And I think he showed that a lot more last year than he ever got to just because of opportunity with Eric All going down and some other young guys being contributors there. But I like Luke Schoonmaker. I think he is going to have a good career and be one of those, you know, many Michigan tight ends that do so. But your thoughts on where he could end up? I think probably third, fourth round is where, you know, we'd project him.
Yeah, I think third round is kind of where you start keeping an eye on him. This is a historically good tight end class. I mean, there could be as many as three that go in the first round just from all the mocks I've been seeing. So, and again, you know, anytime you have a Michigan pass catcher in the draft, because they don't usually have a featured guy, there's always questions about, you know, the lack of lack of catches, lack of production is what I was looking for. So it makes GMs dive into the tape. And I think when he had as good a combine as he did, I think a lot of teams kind of had to go back and say, okay, well, this guy, he's more than a willing blocker. He's got the athletic frame. He moves well. You know, his situation didn't really allow for him to have, you know, 50, 60 catches, 70 catches, like a lot of these tight ends do, but you know, I could see a scenario where he winds up being a really solid, like number two tight end somewhere. You know, there are a lot of NFL teams that run the two tight end sets like Michigan does. There are teams that just in general are going to throw the ball 40 times a game. So I think that Schoonmaker to me, again, I think he's a quality number two somewhere in the right situation. I think he's a good enough receiver. I think that he can be, now he's a little bit on the older side. I think I read somewhere, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think he's going to be either 24 or 25 this season. So he's on a little bit on the older side, which drops you down the board a bit. But yeah, I think, you know, if he finds somewhere to go where he can be part of a play action passing game there, you know, middle of the field, just kind of open, I think that's where he can feast.
For sure. We saw that in Megan, our producer, pulled up a photo from the Indiana game. That's all. I mean, he lived there, middle of the field, had 10 catches in that game at Indiana last year when he really started to break out and become, I think, J.J. McCarthy's favorite target, really, until he suffered some injuries late in the year. But Luke Schoonmaker, Googling it right now, great tool. September 28th, he will turn 25. So you're right, he is going to be a little bit older. Spent 5 years in college. And, you know, so I think they're going to look at that. But he grew up a Patriots fan. Seems like the Packers are looking for a tight end, so we could see him. Lions could use one for sure. Maybe at number six overall. Just kidding. But
don't you dare.
We've been there before.
Brief tangent here. It's so funny that we're talking, you know, oh, he's 25 years old. He's ancient. Like, and I just turned 30 and like my knees crack every morning when I get out of bed, but 25 years old, he's some fossil. It's just kind of funny how these scouts are sometimes.
True. For sure. So now I kind of wanted to go rapid fire for the next few guys, but they all are really, really interesting. And I want to start with Jake Moody, which is he's going to get picked, I think, this weekend. There's little doubt in my mind. You know, I think there's a chance he doesn't, but to me, I'm pretty confident in saying that. You see, you know, he's like a top 150 prospect according to a couple different places. He's probably going to be the first kicker off the board. There has been he would be the 16th kicker to be picked since 2014. So it's gotten more and more popular that people are actually using draft picks on kickers. There has been at least one chosen in each of the last seven drafts. And I think Jake Moody leads the way here. Unbelievable pro day. I forget the exact numbers, but I think he only missed one kick. He lined up and made like a 63 yarder. So just ridiculous. And I would love to see him on the Detroit Lions. I know you read, like when I was Googling Jake Moody and doing some, you know, writing over the last couple weeks on the draft, there's an article from like every team site in the entire NFL. They're like, you know, in about half need a kicker ish, you know, maybe 10, 15, all those teams were like, they could use Jake Moody. We could use Jake Moody, especially Dallas Cowboys. Seems like a lot of buzz there. Your thoughts quickly on Jake Moody potentially being the top kicker off the board. And I mean, I think he's just immediately going to boost, you know, and give a team, you know, what they would need in the kick game. When you look at the Cowboys, what a disaster that was last year. I mean, he's not going to be that, you know, he's not gonna be missing extra points in the playoffs. Like, he is a super reliable guy. He's older too, which I think you probably want out of a kicker too. He's had so many different experiences, clutch kicks. I just think Jake Moody is going to be a rock solid kicker in the NFL.
Yeah, he's got the talent, and I know he missed six field goals last year, but it feels like every time Jake Moody missed a field goal, it was because here, Jake, it's a haphazardly thrown together 2-minute drill in the wind. We sputtered out. Here's a 56 yard attempt for you right before we head into the locker room. And it just always feels like that's kind of what he fell privy to. You know, when you take a kicker, I think so much of it is, you know, he has the talent. A lot of these guys, the leg talent is there, but for him, it's the makeup. I mean, I think that anyone who has a meeting with him, he's an interesting guy. Like, when we would do media stuff with him, he's very interesting to talk to, but he's just very even keel. And, you know, you can see that he doesn't really get frazzled by missed kicks and things like that. He's just very clinical in that regard. So, he's draftable in my book. I saw the Cowboys take him in like the fourth round, and I think it was Matt Miller's mock draft from Sunday. I mean, again, you get in those mid rounds. I mean, if you can get a guy that you think is going to be on your roster for 5, 6, 7, maybe in 10 years in terms, you know, if he's a good kicker, then you do it. Cause if you don't have a kicker in the NFL, typically you spend an entire season trying to look for one. And sometimes it's too late.
It would be a classic Jerry Jones, maybe not even overreaction, but like, he was so mad about what happened in the playoffs last year with Brett Maher that he's just going to like reach in the third or fourth round and grab Jake Moody. I would love to see it. And he would reunite with a couple former teammates there as well. Let's talk Olu Oluwatimi, who was not even in a recent mock draft by, I think, was it Matt Miller of ESPN? Which was obviously surprising, but not as much given that you see him in some other 7-round mock drafts. And those are really hard to do. By the way, I think they're probably throwing darts towards the end of it, because these guys focus so much on the first couple rounds, and that's kind of more what you can predict. But he was in the 7th round in Dane Brugler's 7-round mock draft last week. He's the Outland Trophy Award winner. Looking at past Outland Trophy Award winners, just about all of them went top 10 in the entire draft. The last 5 have been in the first round. 9 of the last 10 have been in the first round. Olu, a little bit of a different beast. I mean, you know, he was kind of more of a college, you know, very, very good in college. I do think he was probably a tad overrated, and I hate to say that because he was so integral for that Michigan offensive line. But your prediction on where Olu Oluwatimi will go? I think he'll get drafted. He's a good enough player and a good enough, you know, high character guy, that sort of thing, to not. And I think there's going to be value there, but he's not really versatile. You know, he's pretty much locked in as a center. And I think that probably makes his value dip a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of versatility there. And he might be scheme dependent too. I mean, he's more of a power guy than I think he is, you know, all right, Olu, let's go find someone at the second level and hit them. I mean, everyone's just so much more fast and athletic at that next level. But yeah, I reached out to Matt Miller after that mock, and he said that his mock was based on team intel and that teams just weren't as high on him as maybe the rest of us are. But if I had to throw a dart at the wall, I would still say that someone's probably going to take him in the maybe the fifth round. Seems right. Fourth round, maybe. I think it's a relatively safe pick. Once you get to that day three, you're looking for guys with traits. And Olu doesn't really have the traits that wow you, but the film is good. The IQ is really solid. And I think that in the right situation, at the very least, he's one of the better backup centers in the NFL and maybe has a chance to be a, you know, a pretty good starter. So we'll see with him. Again, I think he just kind of is what he is. And that's great. He was an Outland Trophy Award winner. He won the Remington. He won both of those awards. Solid, really good player. But yeah, I think once you get to the NFL, if you don't have that one trait to hang your hat on in those middle rounds, teams are kind of they'll punt on it until maybe the value is a little bit better for them. So I think he's a good value pick on day three. I just don't know that he's going to go super early.
A lot of those guys that everyone projects to fall super late, a lot of times they just don't, because it just takes one team that just wants them and, you know, is going to grab them in maybe the fifth or sixth. So I could see that easily happening with Olu. Let's talk Mike Morris, who I do wonder, and I hate to do this because, you know, he's 2 feet in the NFL draft. But I mean, I do wonder if he knew that he was going to be this late of a projection, if he would have gone or not, because when it seems like he kind of made up his mind and was saying, you know, that senior day is going to be his last game and at the big house, you know, at that point he was like a top 30 overall prospect. I remember Mel Kiper, I think he was 26 is where he had him late in the season. Injury played a factor there, but he had a pretty rough showing at the combine, pretty rough showing at pro day as well in terms of testing. So not a fall from grace, but I think definitely a fall down the draft boards. And, you know, I think Mike Morris can still be productive in the NFL, but it's definitely going to be in the later rounds here to start. And maybe that'll be better for him, though. You know, maybe he goes to a place that fits him a little better and that will want to use his skill set as opposed to maybe someone reaching earlier on. You're on a worse team, worse culture, that sort of thing. But your thoughts on Mike Morris here, because he's another one of those guys that I think it was a little surprising to see him in the seventh round in that same Dane Brugler mock draft from last week.
Yeah, you almost, again, you want guys to get drafted because then you get to say that you were one of the best 250, 260 players in your class. You get to have that designation. But, you know, with a guy like him, if he's going to fall, you almost would be curious to see what a bidding war for him would look like as an undrafted free agent, because he is a guy that, you know, when he was healthy last year, he was disruptive. He was powerful. I thought you know, he's never an elite speed guy or anything like that. But I think there's a role for him in the NFL as like a rotational defensive lineman. I think the fact that he's proven that he can easily put on weight, take off weight easily. I think that makes him, you know, versatile in terms of, okay, is he going to bulk up and play in a 3-4? Is he going to play in a 4-3? Are they going to kick him inside? I think there's a lot of things you can do with him. It's just, you know, not, and this is the thing I would say to Michigan fans in general, because there's always the, you know, if a guy is in a first round pick, people are like, oh, well, squandered an opportunity to come back next year. And, you know, something that people have to realize is that sometimes you're just a finished product and it's time to go. I don't know that Mike Morris would ever have been, you know, more athletic or faster than he was when he came out. So there's a role for him in the NFL without question. I think that, you know, obviously the pro day, the combine testing were not good, but I think the film, when healthy, is pretty good. And in the right situation, like you said, I think that he can be someone that, you know, does crack a defensive line rotation.
Let's talk Ronnie Bell, who is kind of another one of these guys. I think someone's going to take him. You know, he's too good not to be. He didn't appear in that 7-round mock draft that I continue to refer to ad nauseum. But I think Ronnie is just going to be a guy that's going to stick in the NFL for quite a long time, you know, barring, you know, health and everything like that. But I mean, just so, you know, such a good route runner. He's not an elite athlete, but is going to be somebody that I think a team, you know, I wouldn't even call it taking a chance on, you know, but just taking a flyer on, and, you know, adding him to their team and seeing him go out there and compete, because I think he's probably going to exceed expectations like he has his entire career.
Yeah. Ronnie Bell's a guy I've never caught out Ronnie Bell. I mean, he was someone that was able to find a way to push through on, you know, in a room that included Donovan Peoples-Jones and Tariq Black and Nico Collins. And, you know, outside of Tariq Black, those other two guys have been pretty solid NFL wide receivers so far. So for me, again, he's probably, yeah, sixth, seventh round pick. The athletic testing doesn't jump off the page to you. I think he ran like a 4.54. He claimed that he ran in the 4.4s after they corrected it, but that was the official number, was 4.54. As someone that can be a fourth wide receiver and maybe be a return guy, I think that he has value for someone too. We'll see what happens with him. Interesting to see what happens the further he gets away from, you know, the torn ACL too. I think that there probably is a little more juice there still to unlock, but you know, the way that he tracks balls for a player his size, the way that he, I think he runs good, crisp routes. Again, he's not, he was never Chris Olave. You know, that's just the first name that popped in my head, but I think he can be a quality addition for someone, probably somewhere in the sixth round.
I like it. And again, some of those late round guys actually have the benefit of going somewhere that fits them a little bit better, because teams start, you know, drafting on need a little bit more as opposed to best available, that sort of thing. Let's talk about the last few guys here. I think Ryan Hayes could be picked. I think probably Jamon Green at the corner spot, Brad Robbins at punter, probably undrafted free agents. We did hear earlier on in the week that Jamon Green has talked to just about every team in the NFL. He had formal interviews with 7 or 8. But your thoughts on Ryan Hayes, Jamon Green, Brad Robbins, and some of those other guys who are also, you know, on the fence maybe of being picked, you know, but could be, you know, hearing their name called this weekend and or getting that phone call right after the draft as a priority undrafted free agent.
Yeah, I don't know if Brad Robbins is going to get drafted, but I think that he will be one of the first guys to sign an undrafted free agent deal if he doesn't. I think that it seemed like at points last year, he fell off a little bit, but I felt like something wasn't right there. Maybe he had a leg injury or whatever it was, but you know, I think that he has a chance to go late, but it's just so tough. You know, you get to those later rounds and all of these guys, especially guys like, you know, I haven't seen Jamon Green pop up in any mock drafts. Ryan Hayes, you know, it's been sixth or seventh round, but it wouldn't surprise me to see him fall out altogether. But, you know, there are guys that can, you know, be solid depth pieces in the NFL. Hayes, I think it probably comes with a switch inside to guard. Doesn't quite have the length to play tackle. And I don't know that he's athletic enough to stay out there, but I could see him being either a swing tackle or a guard in the NFL. Who am I missing here? I feel like Hayes, Robbins, Jamon Green, Carter Seltzer, and Joel Honigford participated in Pro Day. Joel Honigford apparently has had meetings with a couple of NFL teams, so that's probably a priority free agent thing to look at. I don't see those guys getting drafted, but yeah, I think all in all, you look at this list and there's probably Michigan sent 9 guys to the combine. I bet that 8 of them are drafted. That would be my bet, so to speak.
I like it. I would go 7 or 8. I'm trying to look here if we did miss anybody, but I think we got everybody there. So we'll be covering it over at thewolverine.com, not only tonight with potential first round picks, but Friday night. Guessing we'll have a couple guys there. And then Saturday, I remember a couple years ago, Michigan had all those Saturday picks, I think in 2020, and they were all within like a half hour. So that was quite the scramble mode over at thewolverine.com virtual offices. But we will be around regardless for the chaos. So join us over there. Let's transition into some more kicker talk. James Turner out of Louisville enters the portal. And this is something that we have talked about for a few weeks. And I think, you know, kind of our shows have been kind of the first ones to start talking about, does Michigan need another kicker? You know, you have Tommy Dome in there, you have Adam Samaha coming in as a freshman, but I think they'd like a little bit more experience there. And then as soon as James Turner from Louisville, 2-time all ACC honorable mention, enters the portal, he also, you know, clicks that box in there to request teams not to contact him. And that likely, as we've seen, you know, through precedent here, means that he knows where he's going to end up, or, you know, as soon as he entered the portal, he was able to have contact with teams. And, you know, from what we've heard, Michigan in very, very good shape here. The Saline, Michigan native, right down the street there from Ann Arbor, makes a whole lot of sense. I'll read off a couple of his stats here. 47 of 59 for his career. Long of 50, which is, you know, pretty standard. I think people were a little spoiled over the last few years, but he was 20 of 22 last season. That set the Louisville program record for amount of makes in a season. 14 of 20 in his career from 40 to 49 yards, just one of six from 50 plus. And again, that long is right at 50. He has done kickoffs in the past. He did them in 2019, but hasn't the last few years focused mostly just on place kicking there. And I think really that's the need Michigan has, right, AB? I mean, I think Tommy Doman can kick off, or Adam Samaha. I think Tommy Doman can absolutely punt. And I was asking him that at the Fiesta Bowl. What's your top trait? What's your favorite thing to do? And he said, well, I like them all, but I think people think I'm best at punting. And, you know, that was kind of the case, it seemed like, throughout his high school career. So if you're Michigan and you know, there's going to be a game that comes down to the wire this fall that, you know, could be for all the marbles or some of the marbles or, you know, all the marbles in the Big Ten, then I think, you know, you'd feel a lot more comfortable, you know, with a guy who has been there, done that. And I think, you know, James Turner would be a pretty solid addition.
Yeah, the second you see a kicker, because we've known, I think we've talked about it the last few weeks on here, that kicker was going to be a position that this staff was going to look at in the portal. The second a kicker pops into the portal and you see that he's from Saline, you go, so, you know, draw the conclusions that you may from all of that, including the do not contact designation. So will that, you know, announcements and things can come as they may, but if all things are pointing in the direction we think it is, yeah, I love this move because, you know, this is a team that has national title aspirations, at the very least Big Ten title aspirations. And the fact that, you know, you didn't want to get caught in a spot where, you know, you had to lean on Tommy Doman to do both, or, you know, you have to have a true freshman coming in and make kicks. Now, if Adam Samaha wins the kicking battle and he's, you know, he's able to put good kicks where they belong and bad kicks in the past where they also belong, then yeah, but that's also a pretty big what if. You like to have the known commodities there as well. So yeah, I mean, I'm extremely on board with it for all the reasons you listed and then some. You know, let's just say you get yourself into a national, title game with Georgia and it's tight and you need a guy to, because I do think that we could be staring at a situation where those two teams are kind of on a collision course this year. It didn't happen last year, but it feels like if Michigan's going to climb the mountain at some point, that's going to be the beast that you have to slay. And if you get there and it's a tight game, I like the sound of a James Turner kicking field goals for you in that game than I would a true freshman, or, you know, a guy who's also not only punting, but let's just say he takes a hit on a punt, a roughing the kicker type deal, and then he's injured and all of a sudden you have to start from scratch. So yeah, put it where it belongs, put this special teams, you know, keep the special teams train rolling of these guys that can do the job and have experience doing the job. And, you know, I want Tommy Doman to focus on being elite at one thing instead of having eggs in all kinds of different baskets. I'm sure he's capable. Wouldn't even be surprised if at some point at Michigan, he does wind up having to be that guy out of necessity. But in the here and now, if this is the opportunity that's presented to you, you take it and just keep building. You know, you're just well-rounded in so many areas.
Yeah, it's really hard to do all three. I mean, Michigan hasn't had a guy do that since 2016, Kenny Allen, and that was out of necessity as well. And Kenny Allen did a good job at it, but there were still games where he missed some pretty big kicks. You know, you look at the Wisconsin game where they kept that game close because of, I think, three missed kicks from him. But we have here pulled up James Turner's tweet, you know, mentioning that he has the 1 year left. Thanks, Louisville. But, you know, this is something we talked about too, and I'm glad we have this pulled up as well. Like, he enjoyed his time at Louisville. There's all sorts of guys right now that are entering the portal that love their school. It's not like there's this hostility there, but just are looking for something new, maybe for that last year. And Michigan has so much to sell in that regard, especially to kickers, because of, you know, being, you know, one of those teams at the top of the special teams efficiency ratings over the last few years. Jay Harbaugh being a fantastic special teams coach, and also having great kickers. Jake Moody leaves, and he's probably the most NFL-ready kicker, as we talked about earlier, in the NFL draft, you know, prospects list, because of all the big situations he's been in, because of all the success he's had, because of how much Jim Harbaugh values kickers. I think, you know, I could screw up this quote, but he said this, and I think it was on Pardon My Take several years ago. To win a championship, you need a good quarterback, a great defense, and a good kicker, or a great quarterback, a good defense, and a good kicker. The constant is the kicker, and he's been a part of championship teams and has seen that. So, you know, I think it's really important. Michigan has a ton to sell right there, and we could kind of see that. I will not rule out Adam Samaha coming in and being special right away, because when you read about him and you see his stats in high school and watch him kick, that, you know, he is super impressive as well. I think he has a bright future. And we have to remember, not that everyone's going to be Jake Moody, but Jake Moody went 10 for 11 his freshman year, handled kickoffs as well, and not wasn't the full-time place kicker, but still was able to make 10. Then as a sophomore, you know, he starts to play a little bit more, and then he really goes off there the last few years. And I will say this as well, Phil Steele, talking to him last summer, and, you know, we were just – I think he rated Michigan special teams number one in the country going into last season. And I asked him about that, you know, how important is that? You know, is that something that people maybe will overlook? And he said it's really important. He was talking to David Cutcliffe, the former, is he still at Duke? The Duke coach, who is really high on special teams and has always had good special teams. And he said 1 year at one Duke, six games, special teams. And that was a year that they got bowl eligible. So it can be that big of a difference. I'm not saying it's going to win Michigan six games, but special teams are super important. And, you know, I think solidifying that would be huge for the Wolverines. Anything else, AB, on kicking and James Turner?
No, I mean, I'm just, this is more time than a lot of podcasts would devote to the special teams part of it. We joked before the show that this is a special teams and offense, a pro special teams, pro offensive line website and program. So, yeah, I like they're using the transfer portal powers for good in a time where, you know, even just a year ago, we're going, gosh, you know, you got to be able to augment your roster through the transfer portal and these guys don't want to come. Well, you filled pretty much every single, not every single hole on your roster, but you've augmented your depth. It looks like you're going to bring in your next starting kicker here potentially soon. Give the staff their flowers again. I mean, the recruiting operation, the transfer portal operation, everything's just kind of humming right now. And, you know, we've come on here a lot, and I say we, but it's been me, sometimes Chris, and sometimes, you know, the recruiting guys too. But this staff and this program is working their tails off right now, and seems like they've kind of figured it out. So winning helps. You have to win football games, but they have, and they've set themselves up to keep this window open.
No doubt. I've been critical as well too, AB. You gotta point that out as well.
You have. I'm a little, so you're more even keel though. We can be kind of loud sometimes.
No. So yeah, like you make great points. I think, when you look at it between Jake Moody, Brad Robbins, and James Turner, and Tommy Doman and Adam Samaha talk, but you know, it's a lot of special teams, but at the same time, it is that important, as we kind of talked about. We've seen Michigan win games over the last couple of years, huge ones at Nebraska 2 years ago, last year against Illinois with the game winning kick. I mean, those are two games that really made those two seasons what they were. So, you know, very, very crucial. We'll see what happens with James Turner. Keep it locked at thewolverine.com for updates as we go ahead, not just on James Turner, but guys coming in, guys coming out, all the roster movement, all of that. We will also be on site at a couple of the stops here coming up on Michigan's team trip around the East Coast. Michigan will be in New York, Washington, D.C., Gettysburg, Canton, and Cleveland. And I know there's a lot to do in Cleveland and Canton. Those are primetime vacation destinations. And I mean, I'm half kidding there. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, those are great attractions. We will both be at those stops. But part of me thinks, just part of me thinks that they're doing, they're going to bring that Big Ten championship trophy over there. They're probably going to take a picture or two like they did in Lansing last year, Part of me just respects the troll job as well, Anthony. But we will have our Chris Ballas will be in New York this weekend covering the team. We'll get some exclusive interviews from that. We will get some behind-the-scenes stuff. And he will be able to also, and same with us at the Ohio stops, just speak to what this experience has been like and talking to some of these guys. They enjoyed the hell out of that trip last year to around the state of Michigan. Guys have enjoyed the trips overseas, which it sounds like they're trying to get back to in the coming years once things kind of die down from the pandemic. But Anthony, team trip coming up. I'm excited to see a couple things I haven't before in the state of Ohio, lovely state, and also see what comes out of the rest of the trip on the East Coast.
I mean, you're going to have to rip me out of the Pro Football Hall of Fame and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I've just been talking football for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
I've got vinyl records on the wall behind me. I've got a guitar maybe 8 feet to my left. That's going to be a good day. We're looking forward to that's the stop I'll be on. I'm looking forward to that. So, I say next year, if you make it 3 wins over Ohio State, 3 Big Ten championships, don't do the whole trip through the state of Ohio. Cleveland, Canton, Toledo, go to the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, head down to Paul Brown Stadium where the Cincinnati Bengals play, Great American Ballpark, do it all. Just gallivant through the state. I want that Big Ten championship trophy on like Millennium Force at Cedar Point. I want it. That would be the way to go, I think.
Well, Chris Ballas, our esteemed colleague, wrote about last year how John Jansen found himself in a parade coming back from a vacation up through Ohio in a little town, and there's some parade going through, and he just blasts the victors going through there, and the people were throwing beer cans at him and stuff like that. So let John Jansen lead the way. I wouldn't mess with that dude, and just kind of see what happens and rile people up if you get 3 straight. I'm with you. But we will see what comes from that. Always a great experience, and I'll say this to end it is, you know, Michigan got a lot of criticism early on for whatever reason for doing these, taking the team to Rome, taking the team across Europe, South Africa, all those stops. But it's like, I don't see any negatives with this. And it's an incredible experience that I wish I would have had, you know, being in college and being able to do that. I've hardly left the country. So, and they're not leaving the country here, but they're going to see parts of the country that a lot of people don't get the opportunity to see, especially with their teammates, their coaches, you know, a lot of their friends. So that'll be a great experience for them. But we will leave it there for today. We'll catch you guys on Monday with our live show. But as we said, and as it says on the screen, make sure to like the video, subscribe to the channel here as we climb towards 22,000 subscribers on YouTube. Thank you to everybody watching, everybody listening, and we will see you next time.